afternoon. This is Chair Ruth Richardson. Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, I call this remote meeting of the Education Policy Committee to order. The clerk will take the roll for attendance.
Chair Richardson?
Present.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Present.
Representative Erickson?
Erickson, present.
Representative Bennett? Representative Berg?
Present.
Representative Bowe? Representative Christensen?
Present.
Representative Drazkowski?
Present.
Representative Edelson?
Present.
Representative Feist?
Present.
Representative Frazier?
Present.
Representative Jordan?
Present.
Representative Keeler?
Present.
Representative Moeller?
Present.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller, present.
Representative Poston?
Present.
Representative Scott? Representative Erdahl?
Present.
Representative Wasilewicz?
Wasilewicz, present.
Madam Chair, a quorum is present.
Madam Chair?
Yes, please.
I am present. I'm sorry, I had to walk away from my computer, so I am here.
Thank you. We have you accounted for.
Thank you.
Next up on the agenda, we have the approval of the March 9th minutes. Representative Bennett, have you had an opportunity to look at those minutes?
I have, Madam Chair, and I move that they be approved.
Thank you. Members, this will be a voice vote, so if you could unmute. All in favor of Representative Bennett's motion, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The minutes are approved. Moving on to the bills on today's for today's committee hearing. First up, we have House File 3926, Representative Keeler bill. Representative Keeler, would you like to move House File 3926 to be referred to the Committee on Education Finance?
I would, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Members, we will have a time certain vote on this bill at 1:25 p.m. Representative Keeler, please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. One of the things that I think we all talk about is the stress and the pressure this pandemic has put on our teachers. I want to say, though, that this is a conversation I've been having in my district with teachers long before the pandemic. What this bill does is it directly addresses the prep time piece of it. You know, many of you are teachers, and I love hearing the stories of your time in classrooms, but I think we're exhausting our teachers to a point that we're actually losing them in the profession, which is extremely detrimental to our next generation and investment in our public school systems. And so I've sat and I've listened a lot, and I want to start out by saying thank you to our teachers. We see you and we know the amount of stress that the last 2 years has put on you. And as a mom who really trusts my school system, I see you and I value you and appreciate you. What I know is that that is not enough in this space. We need to do work and we need to make adjustments to know that we care about you. So what this bill does is really simple. Right now, we get 5 minutes for every 17 minutes in a classroom for prep time. What this language does is it would increase that to be or to go from 5 minutes for every 25 minutes to then now 5 minutes to every 17 minutes. Representative Erickson, I see you laughing at me because I got those backwards, but I just want to make sure I'm outlining it well. So we're increasing from what is currently 5 minutes of prep time for every 25 minutes in the classroom to be 5 minutes of prep time to every 17 minutes in the classroom. What this does is it creates an estimated increase of what our teachers are getting right now, which is only about 45 minutes of prep time, to an estimated 66 minutes of uninterrupted prep time. What I learned in my time in the schools is what we do to teachers is we say, we'll give you this prep time to do your work that you need to do your outreach to parents, to communicate with other colleagues about efforts, but then we're scheduling IEP meetings for them. We're making them cover other classrooms. We're adding these stressors that then now is making our teachers work long into the night, long past their required times to invest in our students. And so that's what this bill does. It's saying that we need to change the prep time, create uninterrupted timeframes during prep time, but then also adding additional prep times for individuals like our special education teachers. I've sat in many talking circles in my community and have listened to the cries of our special education teachers, knowing that they need some more time because of the paperwork that is required of them. So there is a section here that is saying that there would be additional prep time provided for those individuals that are doing some of that extra work. It's a pretty straightforward bill. I'm going to yield the rest of my time to listen to the teachers and here to answer any questions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Keeler. It looks like we have two author testifiers. First up on my list, I'm seeing Laura Eberhardt. If you could introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you so much for having me today. Again, my name is Laura Eberhardt, and I am a proud special ed teacher at Moorhead Public Schools. Excuse me if I kind of read from a little script here. I got to stay on task here. I'm here again to talk to you today about the struggles facing special ed teachers. Thank you so much, Representative Keeler. You hit the nail on the head there. Before the pandemic, I'm sure you guys have heard a lot about struggles of special ed paperwork. When the pandemic started, both the federal and state government passed measures that came with hugely increased paperwork requirements. Not only was the paperwork increased, but had to be completed within a short period amount of time. And we didn't have a whole lot of information for that. What does it look like to have students in a hybrid situation? What about the online format? We needed time to figure out each student and how to best meet their needs. I know that part of that is over. However, I'm sure you've also heard of IEPs, individual education plans, evaluation plans. Those are very huge documents important for serving students. But I kind of wanted to touch on, there's some other little things too, something called progress notes. Each student typically has three goals: reading, writing, and math. A lot of times too, functional skills or social skills goals. Each goal requires a minimum of two objectives per goal. We need to report on each objective, not just the overall goal. One year I served 21 students. A typical range right now is 15 to 20. For example, even if I had 18 students with six objectives each, that's 108 objectives to report on. If each objective took about 5 minutes, that's 540 minutes, or 9 hours of work, about 30 minutes a student, give or take. We do this each quarter on top of putting grades in. Do we want our most vulnerable children to have good lesson plans that meet their unique needs? Then we really need those 2 hours of prep periods those extra minutes, one for just that regular teacher planning, because we're regular teachers, but also for that state mandated paperwork. I really work hard to meet each individual needs of my students because they deserve it. I know that I would be a better teacher, a better case manager, a better mom and wife if I didn't have to not only work on paperwork after hours, because there just isn't time to do it anywhere else, but constantly worry about having it done. I have a son who has autism as well. Now I'm going to cry. His special ed teachers have been absolutely amazing. He would not be where he is today without them. Sorry. So I'm advocating not only for myself, but my son. I always cry when I talk about him. Apologize. Anyway, I'm asking you to please support this bill. Help address the teacher shortage. The bill will make educators have a lot more time to both plan for teaching and modification, as well as complete that state mandated paperwork. It will provide that time we really need to assist other teachers who are only tier one teachers with their paperwork. And you know, really most importantly, it'll help our kids to keep those experienced teachers and just keep us refreshed to help those kids, the most vulnerable. Thank you very much for taking the time to listen to me today. I just very much appreciate it.
Thank you, Ms. Eberhard, for your testimony and for sharing your a little bit of your personal story with us as well. testifiers, I neglected to mention that our committee administrator will be keeping time in the chat today. You'll get a notice when you have 30 seconds remaining and also when you are at time. Up next, we have Kate Schmidt. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Representative Chair Richardson. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Kate Schmidt, and I'm a 32-year veteran elementary school teacher from the Rosemont Apple Valley Eagan School District. I currently serve as the president of the Dakota County United Educators. I would have preferred to have one of my members testify on their prep time, but currently many of my teachers are getting little to no prep time due to the substitute shortage. Let's be honest. Prep time is not really about teachers. It's about students. In order for students to get the education they need and deserve, teachers need time to prepare learning experiences to meet the needs of each individual student. When I first started teaching, I planned one lesson each day for each subject area. It was manageable, but I was not meeting the needs of my students. I taught to the middle, ignoring the high achieving students and ignoring the low achieving students. Over the years, our school systems have improved to provide more individualized instruction that is appropriate for all learners. Today, elementary school teachers plan a mini lesson in each subject area that is followed by small group instruction for as many as 5 different learning levels. The amount of planning that takes is markedly higher, and it is the right thing to do for students. We also have to plan what students will do when they're not in that small group with me, often referred to as managed independent learning time, the key word being managed. The teacher must manage this learning for it to be successful, and that takes planning time. Our middle schools used to have an 8-period day, and teachers had 2 prep periods per day, one to plan with their grade level teams, and one to plan in their subject area. Due to budget cuts about 12 years ago, our middle school schedule was changed to a 6-period day with only 1 prep period per day per teacher. Teachers no longer have time to meet as a grade level team to talk about interdisciplinary units or to discuss individual students who may need more support. This change affected our kids and their learning. During the pandemic, our district implemented a 4-day school week for our middle school and high school students at times. Every teacher I talked to raved about how the extra time, that one day a week, to work together to support students helped learning grow to a whole new level. More planning time is the number one request I hear from my members. If we truly want to take care of students, teachers need time to plan for their success. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we will move on to public testimony. We have 2 individuals who have signed up. We will start with Chuck Ocheki. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. Thank you for the opportunity to testify this afternoon. My name is Chuck Ocheki, and I'm the principal at South St. Paul High School in South St. Paul. I have proudly served as a principal for the past 12 years, 5 years at Stillwater Junior High, and the last 7 at South St. Paul. In addition to being a principal, I'm married to an elementary teacher and have students currently in the middle school and high school. While we, the Minnesota Association of Secondary School Principals, MASPA, AMSD, MASA, MREA, and C believe that prep time for teachers is important to the growth of our students, we question the fiscal affordability of this bill. South St. Paul is a small school with just 900 students in grades 9 through 12. I currently have 35 general educational teachers that teach 5 out of 6 classes. Our teachers have 57 minutes of prep time. If prep time change from 5 minutes per every 25 minutes to 5 minutes per every 17 minutes, we would need to hire an additional 8.65 teachers to cover that time. That would mean an additional $800,000 to the budget, in which we are currently cutting $1.4 million. We fully support prep time for teachers. It's important to support our teachers and our students, and would love to continue this conversation to learn how we can do this without negatively affecting student learning time or negatively affecting budgets. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Nancy Antoine. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I really appreciate this opportunity today. My name is Nancy Antoine. I'm the principal at Bridgewater Elementary in Northfield. I have been a principal for, this is my 20th year. Before being the principal in Northfield, I was a principal in Worthington, Minnesota. So I've done a lot of work both metro and outstate. I'm also the chair of the Board of School Administrators, and I am the 2021 National Distinguished Principal from the state of Minnesota. The same things that Mr. Ochaki said, we understand the importance of prep time. We totally get that. My biggest concern here is the fact that this is going to be a challenge for many school districts. When I came to my current school district, our prep time was 50 minutes a day for elementary teachers. I have been able to increase that to 60 minutes a day for elementary teachers, and that's only due to the fact that we've had local control in order to do that. Without that local control, I would not have been able to do that. Currently, with what's being asked, that would increase my staffing. And again, we're looking at doing budget cuts this spring as well, and that would have a negative effect on that, because adding staff and cutting budgets, they don't work very well together. Also, it would actually decrease the amount of instructional time for our students. And I know coming out of the pandemic, I don't think there's anyone that would agree that we need to decrease the instructional time for our students. So with that said, and again, in collaboration with the School Board Association and the Superintendents Association, MREA and SEEE, I would say that this concerns me a lot, because I want our teachers to have the prep time that they need, but at the same time, I want to make sure that we can budget for that appropriately. And I think that the best way to go with this is to provide that local control. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. We'll move on to member questions. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have a question for the bill author, but first I'd like to make a comment, if I may. I totally, as a former teacher of 33 years in elementary school, I retired about 7 years ago, totally value prep time. It is very necessary, and I understand the pressures that teachers are under and the need for that time. You can't be a good teacher unless you have that time to prepare. But I do have a comment before my question on the special ed teacher that spoke, which she shared the burdens, especially that special ed teachers have and the amount of paperwork that they have. And I was a special ed teacher as well when I was teaching, and I understand that as well. And it frustrates me, because as a legislature, just a few years ago, we mandated that there be, I believe it was like a 50% reduction in the state required special education paperwork. And to my knowledge, that really hasn't been done yet. And so I believe to help those special ed teachers, we need to get to the root of the problem. Instead of scrambling and trying to add more prep time, which is valuable for them, we should be getting to that root problem. And I would love to hear MDE's response to that, but that's a different topic. So now we'll ask my question, Madam Chair. So my question is, and I spoke with my teacher friends in a couple different school districts. They currently get 50 minutes of prep time in the school districts that I spoke with. And I spoke with the principal there, and her comment was, how will teachers and staff cover this additional prep time? They're already struggling for teachers and staff, and everybody is burning the candle at both ends from what she's saying. So to the bill author, have you addressed the logistics of not only what we heard, the amount of money that this will cost school districts and the lack of flexibility for their bargaining, but how will this logistically be done with the shortage we're doing now? There aren't enough people to cover this. Will we be lessening student contact minutes, or I'm a little confused on that.
Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Bennett. I want to go back to your first statement about the paperwork. I agree that the amount of paperwork is ridiculous, and I'd love to work with you on what I'm doing both at the state level but also at the federal level, because a lot of that paperwork comes from the federal level and a lot of it is duplicated. I mean, I'm sure you've seen and other people say, like, we're filling out the same information over and over and over, that there's no like effective, efficient way to do that to reduce the amount of work that they're doing. So that is a side effort I'm working on, and I'd love to have a further conversation with you about how we hold that accountable and continue to actually look at the amount of paperwork. To your second question, I think that this is the struggle that we're in. You know, we heard the substitute shortage issues. We know that schools are sitting at about 70% rate. I used to work as a sub coordinator. I know that that's ridiculous. I know that our teachers are stressed. I know that our principals are stressed. I know that our kids are stressed. I think our entire system is stressed, and this is a small component of what we want to do. I'd love to work on a funding bill that helps fund our schools enough that they can support this. I mean, we're hearing over and over and over that these changes that we need to make have money. This is a policy-focused bill. You know, maybe what we need to do is have a partner effort that's actually fully funding these areas so that our staff and our teachers and our substitutes have the resources that they need. This bill is the policy piece of it, addressing what I believe we need to do to save our teachers, to save the investment in the future, because if we lose teachers, we lose the whole system. And I don't know, I mean, maybe some of the conversations is looking at a 4-day school week. You know, I think we need to be open-minded to what the transitions in education looks like to make sure that we're positively supporting not only our students, but the teachers who are in this space doing this work. I know that that's not a great answer. I think that we always know that when we're underfunded, you know, it affects a lot of people. And so I think the answer to your question is maybe working collectively on increasing funding into our school system.
Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Keeler, and I'd love to work with you more on that special ed paperwork issue. So Representative Keeler and Madam Chair, I just make a final comment that I believe if we force this on schools right now, we are going to push them into even more dire straits with staff shortages and so on. And again, I understand the value of prep time. Teachers need that, absolutely. But to do this, and especially right now, is just pushing things into a worse situation where we don't have teachers and staff to cover what we're doing now. So I really fail to see how we can handle this at this time. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. Representative Keeler.
I'm open to continued conversations because I think we all agree that this is an issue. Representative Bennett, I look forward to connecting with you soon.
And members, I'll just note we've got several hands up and only a few minutes before we need to get to a vote. Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this question goes to one or two of the principals that we have with us today. And first, a general comment. You know, I was a teacher for almost 20 years, and I taught through the pandemic until I was elected here. And so I tell people that I went straight from the classroom to the Capitol because I was doing that. It's only been a year that I've been out of the classroom and miss it all the time. But I was an English teacher and I had 145 students whenever I had any essays, and it was a 5-paragraph essay that I would do. At minimum, it took me about 5 minutes. And so my heart goes out to our special ed teacher that testified today that talked about the number of minutes that she had to do with her goals. That 145 students for 5 minutes, that's 725 minutes or 12 hours of outside of the classroom work that I did to correct my students' papers. And of course it was more than 5 minutes of paper. So for the principals, and it doesn't matter whichever one, my concern is I also desired to have more prep time and also desired to make sure that my prep time was uninterrupted. I served on a scheduling committee before I was elected to the House here, and we were looking at how we could do our schedules different so that we could get more prep time and more flexibility. If this bill were to become law, what would you have to do to your schedule in order to make this happen? Madam Chair.
Mr. Ochecki or Ms. Antoine, which of you would like to take that? I can see Ms. Antoine on my screen, so maybe I'll defer to you.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. This would definitely disrupt my schedule because I would need to add additional prep time in there, which would currently I have the specialist that provide instruction for the students that also provides the prep time for my teachers. That would add additional time to their schedule, which they're already full time. So then I would have to look for part-time employees to do that work. And I can barely find a full-time teacher to hire, much less a part-time teacher to hire. And especially when I'm looking for a part-time FIED teacher, a part-time science teacher, a part-time music teacher, a part-time art teacher, and then I don't have a room to put them in. That's exactly where I'm at. I don't have an extra room in my building currently. I would have loved to have split up my third grade class this year into another section, but I don't have a room for that. So therefore, I don't know where I would put these staff.
Representative Mueller, I can give you a really brief comment, but we'll have to move on.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you. Thank you, Ms. Anton, for your answer. You know, this needs to be worked through our bargaining units and through our local school district. It's really important that we keep this local because I know that our school districts have different needs and different places, and their buildings have different shapes and sizes and different class sizes and all those things. This type of bill that would just strictly overlay everything for the state is going to be incredibly disruptive. We have the same goal. And while we are trying to get that to goal, this is not the answer for that. Thank you so much, Madam Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just three brief comments for the author to keep in mind. It is MDE who is supposed to be reducing the paperwork for special education. We put that into law, and so I suggest you talk to them. Secondly, less instructional time is not the avenue to pursue now. Our children, a third of our children are probably far behind where they should have been had we not had school closures. And this is not a good time to be adding new policies when we need to concentrate on the basics. And finally, be sure you note that a four-day week would have to have commissioner approval. And I know the commissioners of the past have not looked kindly upon districts that are not meeting a reading and math proficiency at higher percentages than they should. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Feist, very briefly, please.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to lift up something that Representative Keeler said, that this is really about retention of teachers. You know, we can get bogged down in the details, but at the end of the day, so many people are burned out and leaving the teaching profession altogether because of this prep time issue, especially in special education. One of the teachers I spoke with said that every single day that she gets up, she like has to force herself to get up and go to work because it's so painful for her right now. And so I see this as a really important retention tool because we have talented, dedicated teachers out there, and they just need the space in their schedule to do their very best for our kids. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Feist. Representative Keeler, I will give you the brief last word on the bill.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for the discussion. I think it's really clear that we all agree that this is an issue. I understand that disrupting a system and changing schedules can be difficult, but we're seeing teachers physically walk out on schools. And I think that at the end of the day, that would be the most disruptive to our students moving forward. And so I'm on board with having future conversations as we want to change and address this, because I just believe that our teachers deserve us to have these conversations in these difficult spaces, because we are about to lose them, and we have got to figure out how to address these issues, and we have to think outside the box a little bit differently. Happy to join in that conversation with anybody who actively cares about protecting our teachers. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Keeler renews the motion to refer House File 3926 to the Committee on Education Finance. The clerk will take the roll. The chair votes aye.
Chair Richardson, aye. Vice Chair Hassan?
Aye.
Representative Erickson?
No.
Representative Bennett?
No.
Representative Berg?
Yes.
Representative Bowe? Representative Christensen?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Frazier?
Frazier votes aye.
Representative Jordan?
Aye.
Representative Keeler?
Keeler, aye.
Representative Mohler?
Aye.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes no.
Representative Poston?
No.
Representative Scott?
No.
Representative Erdahl?
No.
Representative Wasilewicz?
Wasilewicz, aye.
Representative Bow?
Bow votes no.
Madam Chair, there are 11 ayes and 8 nays.
With a vote of 11 ayes and 8 nays, the motion prevails and the bill is referred to the Committee on Education Finance. Up next on the agenda, we have House File 3860, a Representative Bolden bill. I will move House File 3860 be referred to the Committee on Education Finance. Members, we will be looking to have a vote on this bill at 1:45 p.m. Representative Bolden, please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm grateful to be before you this afternoon to present House File 3860. As a nurse and a mom, this bill is especially important to me. It aims to recruit and support licensed school nurses, or LSNs. As we know, these nurses support students. Licensed school nurses have always been an incredibly important part of our schools, and we've certainly seen that play out over the last 2 years of the pandemic. Licensed school nurses support students with their physical and mental health needs, both acute and chronic. They provide and coordinate care, and they are a bridge from healthcare to education. The workforce challenges we've seen across many sectors are also a reality in our school health offices. This bill would create some grow your own opportunities for school nurses. It would establish school nurse recruitment grants and school nurse scholarships with the goal of supporting school health aides in their education and training should they choose to move forward into a career as a licensed school nurse, as well as others who are interested in choosing this important work as a career. So we have several folks here to speak more about this. So with your permission, Madam Chair, I will turn it over to the testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Bolden. It looks like we have two author testifiers. Up first, I see Liz Zeno. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Liz Zeno. I'm a licensed school nurse and a member of the School Nurse Organization of Minnesota. I've worked for Minneapolis Public Schools for about 29 years. I'm excited about this bill. Minneapolis Public Schools is a diverse urban school district, and our health offices are staffed with licensed school nurses and paraprofessional health assistants, or LPNs. We've worked hard to hire staff to better reflect the diversity of our students. We've done fairly well with the paraprofessional positions. More than half of our health assistants and LPNs are people of color, but we have struggled to find diversity among our licensed school nurse candidates, and our current nurses are almost all white and female. On Friday, I had a long conversation with one of our outstanding health assistants. She's frustrated at the lack of opportunity for advancement. She would love to become a licensed school nurse, but she has a young family and the cost of furthering her education is a major barrier. This bill will create opportunities for our health staff to advance as professionals and bring more nurses of color into our schools. For decades, I've hoped to see a health assistant become a school nurse. It hasn't happened in my 29 years, but this bill gives me hope that it might happen soon. The last 2 years have had serious consequences for the mental health of all of our students. School nurses have an important role in supporting students' mental health. Many students' mental health issues are brought to the health office in the form of stomach aches and headaches, and nurses teach self-care for minds as well as bodies. The pandemic has taught us a lot about inequities in healthcare and the consequences of a lack of trust in the healthcare system on communities of color. Having more professional nurses of color in our schools can help bridge that trust gap and enhance the physical and mental health of all of our students. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Jolie Holland. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Jolie Holland. I'm a second-generation licensed school nurse, or an LSN, in a rural community covering 16 schools and programs in 11 locations. I'm the legislative chair for the School Nurse Organization of Minnesota. We're excited and we thank Representative Bolden for authoring this Grow Your Own Type Bill, HF 3860, to recruit, train, and provide loan forgiveness to grow more LSNs. Our students desperately need more licensed school nurses. Snow believes that all students should have equal access to an LSN, and this bill would be a step to achieve this for all students in Minnesota. This is an everywhere problem in rural, suburban, and urban Minnesota. This bill provides opportunities for current school health employees who are not licensed or individuals interested in becoming a licensed school nurse to earn their LSN. And how wonderful if these staff members could be licensed and do the assessments, medical plans, interventions, and responses to help our students. These are perfect candidates to benefit from this bill. They'll get an education, they'll benefit students and staff, and they'll increase staff diversity. Licensed school nurses, or LSNs, are registered nurses with a bachelor's degree or higher. We have a special public health preparation and a certificate. Minnesota law only requires an LSN if there are 1,000 or more students in a school district. That means if there's 99 students, a school is not required to have an LSN, or a school district with, say, 6,000 students is still only required to have one LSN. Only one-third of Minnesota schools have a licensed school nurse. That means that two-thirds of our schools do not have a licensed school nurse. And the medical needs in 2022 for our students is staggering. The current nurse-to-student ratio is one LSN for 1,403 students, and this is the number of students. This is not calculated by FTEs. That means that some schools may have a school nurse for maybe 4 hours a week or less. These numbers are estimates, and we would like the Minnesota Department of Education to determine the actual ratio as they have for other school-related personnel. Parents write notes to the school nurse about their students' health needs, not realizing that many of these individuals that are taking the notes have little or no training, as in their school health aides, their secretaries that are doing the work of a quote-unquote school nurse. When a school does not have a licensed school nurse in their building, who's providing the care for the safety of our students? Are chronic health conditions properly managed? Is the care properly documented? And who's training and supervising the staff so that students are safe? Who's providing health assessments for things like our IEPs or just health plans?
Ms. Holland, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap up your comments.
Only two more sentences. Is the care appropriate, accurate, safe, and evidence-based? We believe this bill will help that problem, and we thank Representative Bolden and thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you for your testimony. Moving on to member questions, Representative Poston.
Thank you, Chair Richardson. My question is for the bill author. Representative Bolden, I've been working on some nursing issues with nursing homes and with home health care. And what I find is there's such a disparity between how a nurse in a healthcare system or a hospital or a clinic is compensated compared to a nurse in a nursing home or home health care. And I suspect that's probably is true here. Can you kind of educate me on that a little bit?
Representative Bolden.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Poston, for the question. If I'm understanding your question correctly, you're asking about the disparity of the compensation for licensed school nurses versus nurses, say, within a hospital?
Yes. Okay. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's a fair question. I think, you know, as we are looking at our healthcare system as a whole, and there is that workforce crisis as a whole, there's opportunities. I mean, there's gaps and needs for nurses in all spaces. And so I think in terms of, you know, how are we recruiting and working on retention for folks, certainly this bill is focused on licensed school nurses. I think there's opportunity to look at that piece. This bill does not specifically address, you know, compensation of the licensed school nurses. We're looking at recruiting folks and retaining them. But I think there's opportunity for that conversation. I think also there's opportunity to look at, you know, where the funding comes from for licensed school nurses. So I would be happy to continue that conversation with you.
Representative
Thank you, Thank you, Representative Bolden. Thank you, Chair.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is very similar to Representative Polskins, but I'm wondering if Ms. Holland or I forget who the other testifier was. Yeah, if they could talk about, you know, what the hourly compensation is for a licensed school nurse versus the hourly nurse in a hospital, that would be really helpful for the committee to put this all in perspective, I think. Thank you.
Ms. Zeno, I see you on my screen right now. Would you be able to respond?
Sure. It varies widely from one district to another based on how the job description is written. So in Minneapolis Public Schools, our school nurses are on the teacher's contract, for better or for worse today. But in many school districts, that's not the case. They might be paid at a paraprofessional level. So it really it varies widely from district to district. In terms of how it compares with hospitals, that is an issue, mostly because it's school year work and not year-round work. And it depends on an education level, that the more educated you are in a school system, the better the compensation is. So that is an issue, especially for starting nurses, as with starting teachers, that that initial salary to come in is not great compared to a hospital.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So Representative Bolden, I think you're a nurse, right?
Representative Bolden.
Correct. She's nodding her head yes, Madam Chair. I think it'd be really helpful. I don't know if this bill's going to education finance next. I missed where it's being directed to. But if you could have some sort of comparison, I think that would be really helpful. And I know, as Massino said, it may vary from district to district, but if you could kind of get some averages or maybe call a few of the school districts, ask what their school and their nurses are paid, and then compare that to a nurse that works in a hospital setting. I think that'd be really helpful to put this issue in perspective. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Scott, and it is going to the Committee on Education Finance. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and a comment to the author. I think a better approach, thinking about the need for school nurses, is to focus on amending 124D.09, which you do refer to in subdivision 3 of section 1. But instead of focusing on grants, let's get our high school students and this would be a diverse population enrolled in courses that are linked with community colleges or technical colleges in the area that provide for nursing careers. For nursing education. I have found in some of my schools where they offer the course for the CNAs that that's really a great introduction to even nursing. And so I think to put our efforts in that way in a policy form instead of going way off on grants and expanding this program so much would really be a boon to our student population and would bring about the diversity that I think we're all looking for to offer the students this opportunity. So I hope that you'll think about that as we move forward. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Bolden.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for the good discussion and good comments and suggestions. I think I appreciate your time this morning. I certainly am happy to work with those of you who spoke up today on these other issues. Two final thoughts. One, in terms of the salary and compensation, I think that is absolutely an issue worth further discussing and a concern. I think that is another reason to be fully funding our schools, to be sure that they have the resources to be providing that adequate compensation for school nurses who are so important. And the other piece, in terms of ways to approach this problem, I think we need to come at it from multiple angles. And so I think this is one piece of the puzzle. It's not going to certainly solve the whole problem. It's going to take multiple approaches, and this is one of them, I hope. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Bolden. I renew the motion to refer House File 3860 to the Committee on Education Finance. The clerk will take the roll. The chair votes aye.
Chair Richardson, aye. Vice Chair Hassan?
Aye.
Representative Erickson?
Erickson votes no.
Representative Bennett?
No.
Representative Berg?
Yes.
Representative Bo?
Bo votes no.
Representative Christensen?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Frazier?
Frazier votes aye.
Representative Jordan?
Jordan aye.
Representative Keeler?
Keeler aye.
Representative Moeller?
Aye.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes no.
Representative Poston?
No.
Representative Scott?
No.
Representative Erdahl?
No.
Representative Wasilewicz?
Wasilewicz aye.
Madam Chair, there are 11 ayes and 8 nays.
With a vote of 11 ayes and 8 nays, the motion prevails and the bill is referred to the Committee on Education Finance. Thank you, Representative Bolden. Up next on the agenda, we have House File 4702. It's a Vice Chair Hassan bill. Vice Chair Hassan, would you like to move House File 4702 to be referred to the General Register?
I'll move, Madam Chair.
Members, we are looking at a time certain into this discussion at 2:10 p.m. Vice Chair Hassan, please explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 4207 is the same as House File 1617 that we all voted for last year. It's the personal finance course. Nothing has changed from last year's bill. Only a different House file number, and we plan to add an amendment at the end to add the civic course as well and be sent to the House floor so these two can be passed together. So I'm gonna be very quick since we don't have a whole lot of time, but I believe that there are public testifiers. So that's my piece.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hassan. We have 4 individuals signed up for public testimony. We'll just note to the testifiers, you each will have 2 minutes to speak, and our committee administrator, Ms. Spreck, will keep time in the chat. You'll get a 30-second notification and a notification when there is time. First, we have Julie Bunn. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Richardson and members, my name is Julie Bunn. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Council on Economic Education, NCEE, the primary organization for training Minnesota teachers to teach economics and personal finance and providing them the resources and support to do so. I want to thank Representative Hassan for bringing this bill forward, and thank you, Chair Richardson, and Representative Gomez, Jay Zhang, and Noor for co-authoring the bill. Today, I make 2 brief points. First, NC fully supports a 1-semester personal finance course high school graduation requirement. The reasons include the following. A, nationally and in Minnesota, research shows that financial literacy is low, and in Minnesota, competency is actually trending in the wrong direction, including especially among young people. B, research clearly demonstrates that a quality introduction to personal finance in high school produces a range of very desirable behavioral changes, and that these changes and outcomes are stronger for students receiving a full course in personal finance than those in standards-only states like ours. C, research shows that there are standards and not, that where there are standards, like in Minnesota, and not course requirements, students in wider and higher income school districts and communities have more access to financial literacy education than those in more diverse and lower income districts and communities. My second and final point. Having said this, MC recommends that a group of legislators and stakeholders work together over the next year to write a more comprehensive bill than the one that is before us today and build a coalition capable of passing it. This bill would address at minimum these additional things. Required standards for this class. What do we expect to be taught and what benchmarks and standards for doing so? Secondly, discuss the quality of in-person culturally responsive instruction in relation to online options or vendor outsourced options. And finally, determine who's eligible to teach this course and how they become eligible to do so. MC and others have recently researched bills across the country that have been successful in obtaining a course requirement at the high school level for personal finance. We are also currently in the process of creating a stakeholder group to advance a more comprehensive piece of legislation. We hope that Representative Hassan and all the co-authors on this bill will provide ongoing leadership of these efforts over the next year. Thank you for your time today, and MC can provide any of the research underlying any of these points to legislatures down the road. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Tim Renzetta. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair and members, I appreciate the opportunity today to provide testimony in support of Minnesota Bill HF4207. My name is Tim Renzetta. I'm co-founder of NGPF Mission 2030 Fund, which is affiliated with NextGen Personal Finance. We're a national nonprofit with a mission to guarantee all high schoolers graduate with a personal finance course. Currently work with more than 1,300 Minnesota teachers who use our curriculum, and they have also invested thousands of hours in professional development. On the subject of teachers, I wanted to highlight a few in Minnesota. You're going to hear shortly from James Rettelsheimer. He's one of 70 personal finance educators that we have recognized as NGPF fellows. He's an amazing educator and an amazing advocate for financial education at the local, state, and national levels. On the topic of advocates, I also wanted to recognize three Minnesota educators who advocated successfully in their school communities so that all students in their high schools take a personal finance course. They are Patricia Lindemann of RTR Public Schools, Melissa Johnson of Willow River Area High School, and Kim DeLong of Murray County Central High School. That's the good news. The bad news. Today, only one in 16 students in Minnesota is guaranteed to take a personal finance course while in high school. We can do better, and NGPF looks forward to supporting your efforts. As we have done to support other states, upon passage of a bill like this that guarantees a one-semester personal finance course, we would commit to the following: continuing to provide our no-cost curriculum, continuing to provide our no-cost professional development, and investing $300,000 to support teacher professional development. In order to have successful implementation, you have to start with teachers. Your bill is part of a larger national movement. In fact, the number of states guaranteeing a one-semester personal finance course has grown from 5 to 10 in just the last 3 years alone, Ohio being the last and largest state to make this commitment. We track bills nationally, and already in 2022, 26 state legislatures have introduced bills relating to personal finance education. I'm happy to share those bills with you. Minnesota has a chance to send a signal to the nation and become the 11th state to guarantee financial education for high schoolers. Students want it, parents want it, and it's good for the state economy. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony today.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have James Rettelsheimer. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, my name is James Rettelsheimer, and in my 20th year of teaching AP and regular economics at Robbinsdale Armstrong High School in Plymouth, I'm a master teacher with the Minnesota Council on Education, a next-gen personal finance teacher fellow, and the author of the economics book, Barron's AP Economics. It's my pleasure to talk with you today about the importance of having every Minnesota student learn the essential life skills of personal finance in high school. Comprehensive personal finance education prepares students to confront our society's greatest sources of financial hardship before they encounter them in the school of hard knocks. It's incredibly rewarding as a teacher to hear back from my former students how they've started an IRA or were able to get a business loan due to what they learned in my class. I even have a former student who started a scholarship as a personal finance student of the year and donated his own money so we could award 12 students a year with generous scholarship money. However, when I tell parents about the personal finance topics I cover with my high school seniors, things like budgeting, credit, saving, investing, IRAs, I couldn't tell you how many times I've had parents tell me, I wish I had learned that in high school. It's no surprise that 83% of high school students' parents surveyed in 2020 by Experience that they wanted their children's schools to do more to help them raise financially capable adults. Show students the power of compounding interest, how investing small amounts of money over a lifetime can turn into millions of dollars. Students often ask, why don't people know about this? I say it's not their fault. It's just they were never taught. Can we think of anyone who will not use this material in their lifetime? Personal finance teaches practical survival skills, investing for retirement, navigating education and career decisions, managing credit, budgeting, ensuring assets that all people need to thrive in modern life. Personal finance education allows students to learn strategies to break the cycle of poverty, build generational wealth, and these students are less likely to fall prey to high-cost predatory loans. I've attended training from the Minnesota Council of Education and NGPF, who are incredible organizations, and they're up to the challenge of providing these things at no cost to teachers. Thank you so much for your time, and please let me know if you have any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Kim Lewis. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. My name is Kim Lewis. I'm with the Minnesota School Boards Association. As well as this afternoon, I'm speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, and the Minnesota Rural Education Association. We appreciate the opportunity to share some important concerns on House File 4207. We've not met directly with Representative Hassan. However, we have testified in the past and hope to work with her moving forward. And we have had several conversations with Representative Erdahl regarding his bill and this amendment. Minnesota high school students have 36 months to complete the required 22 and a half credits to graduate. Those required credits don't allow for a lot of room for classes for students who have worked so hard to master and want to continue through high school. There have been several bills seeking a course for credit, and while the topics are all important, looking at it from a 30,000-foot view, it puts students and families, especially within their senior year, in a position where they won't be able to take courses of choice, like CTE or higher-level language, math, or science courses. Currently, personal finance is a part of economics within social studies academic standards, and the proposed social studies standards, for which have not been finalized yet, provide for making personal financial plans, evaluating how household assets like property, stocks, and savings accounts can generate income, and how managing credit affects one's ability to borrow, rent, get a job, and achieve other financial goals. We'd be happy to work together to strengthen personal finance and civics education through the implementation of the new social studies standards. Please note that implementing new curriculum is very costly, and it is important that school districts can implement any changes in the next revision cycle. We appreciate your commitment to strengthening personal finance and civics education. However, our members believe curriculum decisions are best made at the local level by school boards working together with their students, staff, and community, much like one of the previous testifiers indicated. Our members believe that requiring a full personal finance and civics credit in 11th or 12th grade is too prescriptive and would create significant scheduling challenges and limit academic opportunities for high school students. Choice is important to our families. Accordingly, we respectfully oppose House File 4207 and the Civics Amendment in its current form. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. We will move on to member questions. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I may date myself here a little bit, but when I was in high school, the personal finance stuff that we took up was part of family and consumer sciences. And that was also the class, you know, not only did we learn to balance a checkbook and some of these other things, but we also had the fake baby that felt like a real baby that you took home and it would wake up in the middle of the night and you had to carry this baby around. So I really appreciate what this bill is trying to do. And I think it's super important. And I would like to see this as part of the expansion of what's taught in those economic classes, since it is a requirement. And I think this is one of the most practical things that we can do for our students. I think it's imperative that our kids have a basic handle on personal finance. I think that it can save them a lot of heartache in the future and make them a whole lot less vulnerable to people that are predators trying to get a hold of their money. In some way, whether that's high interest rates on loans or credit cards or what have you. So I'm a big believer in this. I thank you to the teacher that's teaching this already and to Mr. Ranzetta, who is out there leading the charge on this. I think it's super important. I am concerned about the number of mandates that we place on our schools, but I think this is already required in economics. In economics courses. And so I think if we can tweak that and expand that a little bit, I think that's the route to go. And of course, I support civics, but we haven't gotten to that amendment yet. So thank you, Madam Chair. More of a comment than a question.
Thank you, Representative Scott. Vice Chair Hassan, Any comment?
Thank you, Rep. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Rep. Scott, for your comments. I think we agree on this one. It's, you know, personal finance is extremely important. And when I went to high school, I did take, you know, home economics, and there was maybe a glimpse of like a touch on personal finance, but I graduated from high school not knowing how to balance a checkbook. So that is the education that our kids are receiving today, that things have been stretched out so thin that personal finance got lost in the mix. And I asked my son, who just graduated from high school, did you learn personal finances? He did take home economics, but there was a mention of personal finance here and there, but there's not specific mention on it. And today our young people are facing, have higher credit and are in debt more than ever in the history of America. And that tells us that there is something that we're not teaching them. So hopefully we can teach them personal finances in this way. So, but thank you very much. And I'm open to working with anyone who has a different suggestion or different idea on how to make this real for our young people.
Ms. Bunn, briefly.
To respond to Representative Scott's point, there's the extensive and now growing body of research that compares outcomes in states where there's a requirement for embedded in a, like an economic standard, like in our state, compared to where there's full classes, and there's tremendous difference in the outcome. In our state, we don't even have all schools doing the economics requirement in the social studies. We certainly don't know to what extent they're actually doing the approximately 2 weeks of personal finance content that they should be if they're following the standards and the social studies standards. And no one in the state, including MD, is tracking this information, collecting data on it, and enforcing it. So we do not have a situation, even with the revised standards that are coming down, even though they do have some good content, we have no assurance that that content will be taught in our schools at this time or in the future.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a couple of comments. You know, in the standards for social studies, present and perhaps future, is economics, and part of that can be personal finance. But what I found in my Malacca High School is that my teachers think outside the box, and I had the local bank come into the school. They had a spare room, a small office space, and the students are able to learn personal finance by coming to the bank, and they can come every day, because there is a staffer from the First National in Malacca there. And I was talking to the students recently, and they just love it. And they learn personal finance directly. And I think that's one of the best opportunities. So I wanted to put in that plug for what's happening in one of my districts. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A question for Mr. Anzetta. Mr. Anzetta, thank you for your testimony and for your leadership. I'm curious, in those other 10 states that you talked about, this bill obviously simply puts a mandate out there on schools, and that's what makes it unpalatable and undoable. What is the mix of the experiences you've seen in those other 10 states? Have the bills that come through those states actually said, you know what, reduce a mandate in this area? Or what other things have they done in order to not place that extreme burden on school districts in an environment that they can't afford to do so?
Yeah, great question.
Mr. Renzetta.
Great question. So I think we've seen a variety of approaches. Kind of most recently in Ohio, we recognize a lot of states are challenged with 3 or 4 years of math requirements. And so oftentimes we'll see an option where they'll say, okay, you can take personal finance and have it qualify as one of those required math classes, or it can be an elective. I think we've typically seen in many states, so for example, Florida, which had bills that passed both the Senate as well as the House, they're basically reducing the number of electives. They have 8 electives currently required there, which is on the high side nationally. And so they said, okay, instead of 8, it's 7.5, and every student will take a half credit personal finance course. So I'd be happy to share with you, we've kind of done an analysis of all the states that have bills that have been passed to show what change they made in their curriculum. I believe in North Carolina, which their bill, they're one of the more recent states too. I believe they swapped out one of their government government classes. And so instead of, they placed it kind of that one half credit in government. So I think we've seen a variety of approaches. That's kind of the short answer. And regarding kind of putting it into a required class, I would just follow up on what Dr. Bunn said and agree with her wholeheartedly that we've seen, you know, if you were tasked with putting together a personal finance class in 2 weeks, I think we'd all be challenged to say there's just so much to cover that you're really not going to pay the attention that's required, especially in a day and age where so much is changing. You know, look at fintech, look at the, you know, online brokers in terms of they're targeting younger people to sign up for their platforms to trade stocks. And if we're not addressing those issues and more in a more comprehensive one semester way, I'm afraid we're really shortchanging kids.
Representative Jaskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Anzetta. That was helpful. Thank you, Representative Hassan, for bringing the bill. And I did vote for it last time. I was hopeful that we would see some more creativity around maybe some other ideas to do this in a way that doesn't place a net burden on our schools. We've got to do it in a way that works, and we've got to maybe be more creative. I'm hoping I'll be voting no today. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Jaskowski. Looks like we've gotten through member questions. Representative Erdahl, I see that you've submitted an amendment for this bill. Would you like to move the A1 amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair, I would move the A1 amendment.
And then Representative Erdahl, can you please explain the A1 amendment, please?
You want the long version or the short version?
Oh, let's give the 2-minute version.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm being a little facetious there because you've heard about this bill quite a few times over the years. And I want to add that I do support the Hassan bill. Elements of that were in one of my original civics bills. I had them paired and then I divided them. So it's bringing them back together again. This bill, this amendment did pass off the House floor as an amendment to the Education Omnibus Bill last session. The fact is that we do require that the civics be taught in our schools. It's in statute now, so we're not adding a mandate. We are trying to clarify some of the things about this. We need to do a better job of imparting this knowledge. The National Association of Education Progress says that we are graduating students at 24% proficiency. That means that over 3 out of 4 are failing in gaining civics knowledge when they graduate. So it's being taught, but it's not being learned. And what this bill does, very simply, what my amendment does, it raises the relevancy by making civics credit-bearing, and it requires that it be taught to juniors or seniors, or to students in other rigorous courses, advanced placement, baccalaureate. That was one of the compromises that I made. Now, just to, again, specify in a few areas here. Again, this is neither of these. The fiscal part of the bill or the civics, it's not a credit, it's not one credit, not two credit. It just says credit, whatever credit assigned by the local school district with local control. And what it's doing is simply raising the relevance by making it credit bearing. Again, not a mandate. It's in statute. Both of these are. And also, I'm getting tired of school districts saying that they can't do something. They can do this. It's been done, being done by school districts in Minnesota, and it's being done in other states in this country. And so I do appreciate you allowing this to be brought forward, Madam Chair, and urge the support of this.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Vice Chair Hassan, your response to the A1 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Erdahl. This is a friendly amendment, and I urge members to vote for it.
Members, this will be a voice vote. I'll ask you to unmute yourself to vote on the adoption of Representative Erdahl's A1 amendment. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Vice Chair Hassan, do you have any final words on your bill as amended?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a good bill, and I got a perfect score last time because everyone voted for it. Please support this bill. It's going to help our students live a productive life.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hassan. Vice Chair Hassan renews the motion to refer House File 4207 as amended to the General Register. The clerk will take the roll. The chair votes aye.
Chair Richardson, aye. Vice Chair Hassan?
Aye.
Representative Erickson?
Erickson votes no.
Representative Bennett?
No.
Representative Berg?
Aye.
Representative Bo?
Bo votes aye.
Representative Christensen?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Frazier?
Frazier votes aye.
Representative Jordan?
Jordan, aye.
Representative Keeler?
Keeler, aye.
Representative Moeller?
Aye.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Poston?
Aye.
Representative Scott?
Aye.
Representative Erdahl? Representative Wasilewicz?
Wasilewicz, aye.
Representative Erdahl?
Madam Chair?
Sorry about that. Aye.
Bennett changes from no to aye.
Madam Chair, there are 17 ayes and 2 nays.
With 17 ayes and 2 nays, the motion prevails and the bill as amended is referred to the General Register. Glad, Representative Erdahl, that you got to vote on your civics bill before it moved on to the floor. House file, next up on the agenda, we have House File 3965. Vice Chair Hassan, another one of your bills. Would you like to move House File 3965 to be laid over for possible inclusion in a committee omnibus bill?
So moved, Madam Chair.
And it looks like you have an A1 amendment to get the bill in the form that you would like. Would you also like to move the A1 amendment?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Members will have another voice vote. Please unmute yourself to vote on the adoption of the A1 amendment. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Vice Chair Hassan, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for the opportunity to present House File 3965. It's an act relating to education, modifying the teacher shortage requirements. As we all know, there is a teacher shortage in Minnesota and nationwide. If we actually want to fill those shortages, we need reliable, consistent information and data so that the legislator can direct resources and support to ensure the students have the great and diverse educators they deserve. In House File 3965, Section 1 deals with, right now we do not have a definition of what teacher shortage is in the statute. So House File 3965, as amended, would change that so we could see whether the actual gaps and needs are in our schools, and then we can work to fill them. And Section 2, every 2 years, PELSP creates a supply and demand report that looks at many elements of what our teacher workforce looks like. Section 2 adds some additional reporting requirement to make this critical report even more helpful and comprehensive. And Section 3, last year, the legislature passed language in higher ed for teacher shortage student teacher grants and teacher shortage loan forgiveness based on the most persistent licensure shortage areas. The list of licenses in Section 3 would align the K-12 and the higher education lists to be consistent. With that, Madam Chair, I have a couple testifiers and we'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hassan. It looks like we have two author testifiers. Up first, we have Matt Shaver. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Richardson, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Matt Shaver, Policy Director at EdAllies, and I'm here to testify in support of House File 3965 as amended. I want to thank Representative Hassan for her thoughtful leadership on the proposal. I'll start by unequivocally stating that there absolutely is a teacher shortage in Minnesota. What House File 3965 will do is give decision makers and the public a better sense of the size and shape of that shortage so we can actually work toward eliminating those shortages. The amended language that more comprehensively defines what a teacher shortage is was crafted over the last month by stakeholders who reached out after the companion bill was heard in the Senate on February 16th. Folks who do not always see eye to eye on education worked in good faith to put this amendment together. So how many elementary teachers are we short in Minnesota right now? It seems like a pretty straightforward question that should be answerable, right? Currently, the legislature cedes authority to define, measure, and report on teacher shortages to our state licensing agency. This is reported in a biannual supply and demand report. And according to the 2021 version of the report, the answer to our question is 746. We have an elementary teacher shortage in Minnesota of 746. 746 is the sum total of the Tier 1, Tier 2, and out-of-field permission teachers working in schools right now. So if you follow that logic, if we measure a shortage just by counting the number of people with specific licenses actively teaching in our schools right now, what happens to our data if a teacher leaves? What happens to our data if a teacher is hired? If a Tier 2 elementary teacher quits today, or our elementary teacher shortage doesn't get bigger by one, it would get smaller by one. If a Tier 2 teacher is hired to fill an open teaching job at an elementary school, our teacher shortage gets bigger. Depending on the tier of license, a teacher of record leaving the classroom can shrink the shortage without even needing to be replaced. A teacher of record entering the classroom can increase the shortage. Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers are essential not just to the function of schools, but to the students they serve. 26% of teachers with a Tier 1 license are teachers of color. 23% of teachers with a Tier 2 license are teachers of color. They are not replaceable, and yet the way we currently define, measure, and report on teacher shortages treats them as such. Page 14 of the 2021 Supply and Demand Report states this: an analysis of positions filled by teachers holding a Tier 1 or Tier 2 license or permission reveals that if 15% of teachers with an active license returned to the classroom, there would be enough to fill all assignments currently filled by a teacher who is not holding a professional license for their assignment. If this happened, we would eliminate our teacher shortage entirely with a net increase of zero in the number of licensed teachers working in schools in our state. How has the pandemic impacted pre-existing teacher shortages? Have we made any progress in closing the teacher shortage in the last decade in Minnesota? How would we even know if a shortage was closed? Passing House File 3965 as amended will help us get clearer answers to these questions. Thank you all for your time, and thank you all for your public service to our state.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Vero Vasquez. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Richardson and members of the committee. My name is Veronica Castellanos Vasquez, and I am a Tier 2 dual immersion kindergarten teacher at Emerson Elementary in Minneapolis Public Schools. I'm here to testify today in support of House File 3965. I want to express my gratitude for the opportunity to speak to you today about teacher shortage and licensure. As I mentioned earlier, I'm a Tier 2 licensed teacher after completing a master's in education in bilingual programs with the University of Minnesota and passing all the requirements of the program. After 5 years as a teacher, earning an award as a Fox 9 top teacher in 2019, and 9 years as a bilingual associate educator, I still don't have my Tier 3 license because I have been unable to pass the MTLE content assessments. As you know, I'm on strike, and I just came back from picketing, and I believe in teachers like me. Help me to stay as a teacher of color in my classroom with my little ones. Every day, I welcome my students and families, and when my students and families come to my classroom, they don't see a teacher that has a Tier 2 license. They don't see a teacher that is struggling with the MTLE content exam. What they do see is a teacher that cares and loves their children and knows how to teach kindergarten in a bilingual setting. Someone who will go the extra mile to create a loving learning environment. I would like to invite any legislator on this committee or anyone from PELTS to come and see what I do, the love I have for my students, and the hard work and miracles I do each day. I do not have my teaching job because of the teacher shortage. I have my job because my students need me and they deserve me. I have worked very hard to become the teacher that I am today. When I found the way we define and measure shortages areas as a state means that my presence in the classroom is seen as adding to the teacher shortage, and I feel disrespected and unvalued. I don't need to be replaced with a tier four teacher. I need people to come and fill the 62 open teaching positions in Minneapolis public schools right now. Please help eliminate the teacher shortage by collecting data on the number of and filled positions. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, I will just note that Pelsby is also standing by for questions as well. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to Ms. Malquez for her testimony about the importance of a teacher being a quality teacher, because she certainly is that. And her licensure has nothing to do with the quality that she provides in the classroom. But the point I want to make, and thank you, Representative Hassan, for bringing forth this proposal, because as you and I both know, and I hope that all committee members know this as well, Pelsby is violating state law that governs the reporting requirements. They are suggesting that tiers one and two, I think as Ms. Valquez suggested, are not legitimate, and that's wrong. That's not what is in the law. That is not what was in the teacher reform of the supply and demand report. So thank you again, Representative Hassan, and let's make sure that this correction is a legitimate correction in the eyes of Pelsby. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. I'm not seeing any other hands. Representative Hassan, any last words on your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Rep. Erickson, for your comments. I also want to thank my teacher who testified. I know you guys are in strike. We're standing with you, and I am, happy that you are teaching little ones who will learn to be bilingual. We know how important having a second language or multiple languages is for this young people's brain and their brain development. I want to thank the committee for the lively discussion on this issue. This is an important issue, and the bill will be laid over, and we can work on it if there is anything that we need to add on. But I truly believe that we should, clearly define this teacher shortage, so then our teachers, like Ms. Vasquez, can be considered, teacher in the eyes of the statute. I know you are a wonderful teacher, but we want to make sure that this statute sees you as a full teacher. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hassan. House File 3965, as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion in a committee omnibus bill. Members, just as a reminder that we will have two more meetings this week, our normal standing meeting on Wednesday, March 16th at 1 p.m., and then an additional meeting on Friday, March 18th from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. There being no further business before the committee, we are adjourned.